It is an honor to get to share with you this morning. I think this might be the first celebrate Pride at Evergreen. Yeah. It was exactly a year ago that I shared at PNMC, was able to stand up and say, we're an open and affirming congregation in our updates to the rest of our conference. And the joy from our sister churches was palpable. And it's really great that we've been able to articulate this together as a congregation over this last year, year and a half. I'm going to start today, though, with a painful story first. Planning this service, Jacob and I talked a lot about different things, and specifically, he brought up something that happened to him in South Africa with his youth group there. And he gave me permission to share with you this morning. I have loved that my kids have grown up in the church and we have supported them attending whatever built up their faith and their faith community through the years. However, I knew that one day Jacob would probably meet Christian leadership that would judge him for being gay and would make him feel unwelcome at church. It's a sad commentary on the church, but we had talked to him about it years earlier. And he'd already joined Pink Menno at MCUSA and felt supported even at a distance by his Mennonite family. So in South Africa, for several years, we drove him and Claire for a while to a weekly youth group where he had friends, some from the school, and just they had a great evening once a week. Sure enough, one evening, he came straight home and burst into tears. He was so shocked, so hurt, so betrayed by his worship leaders that not only let a guest speaker say things like, gay people are going to hell, but didn't stand up for him and other potentially queer youth in the room, even though they'd known him for years. We cried with him, wondered what could be done. He said he was going to do the follow-up himself, and he did. He firmly but respectfully called out the problem on their group chat. Other youth responded right away, coming forward and thanking him for his strong voice. So, saying we want to be open and affirming does not magically create welcome and safety. Jacob had always felt welcomed at that youth group, exactly as he was. And the shock that they were not was the biggest hurt. So there's a lot of homework for all of us to do. New terms to learn. I really liked this children's story because it covered a lot of ground. And there's always more things, right, that are not in the book. Try to catch ourselves with microaggressions. That's a whole nother sermon. We've maybe heard that term, ways we unintentionally hurt people by excluding or using wrong language. There's also new things to learn about our theology. And this has been something interesting for me to take on, to learn that some of the patriarchy and misogyny in our Bible translation that I grew up with and thought this is normal, this is the word of God. No, that's not how it is. And I use the words of the Apostle John. Can we find ways to pull the wool from our own eyes? Some foods for thought around this, just as I was thinking about it in the last couple of weeks. We heard in Genesis this morning, the original wording is God as plural, not as masculine. So we are made in our image. Paul mentions this about there is neither male or female. It's very intentional right there in the New Testament. And speaking of Paul, I've heard a pastor suggest he was quite possibly aromantic, aro, or asexual. That's the A in LGBTQIA. So that could help explain his stance against marriage. What does it mean to be like Paul? What if the word homosexual was never meant to be in the Bible? There's this new documentary called 1946, The Mistranslation That Shifted Culture, poses this important origins and translation question. And should it really be so hard to change pronouns and names for people? People change their names all the time. Go by a new married name. Start going by a middle name instead of a first name. Grow out of childhood nicknames, etc. Speaking of which, we were much less prepared to navigate having a trans daughter. We had not seen it coming and didn't have people to process with that our 17-year-old did not feel she was her real self in her body. So, counseling, the trans family support group that we've gone to the last 4 years, listening, lots of listening, and lots of reading have helped equip us so that we are at least less likely to hurt Claire when we're talking with her now. As an adult, she says she doesn't need a whole lot from us, but as our beloved daughter, there is so much advocacy we need to do. One of the most helpful books I read right at the beginning was something titled Outside the Lines: How Embracing Queerness Will Transform Your Faith. It's written by Mihi Kim Kort. She's a queer Presbyterian pastor, and she talks about how growing up, she loved the annual kids' Christmas pageant. These performances of the nativity story ever so slightly shifted the way we all experienced the world. We were able to act out in bodies and voice, children in drag, boys draped in wings and long shimmery dresses sang in choirs of angels. Girls donned beards and crowns and played shepherds or wise men. Their voices rang out, proclaiming the good news of Jesus' birth from a space that normally allowed only males to preach and teach. As a result, there was a flattening effect. The normal hierarchies that structured the community disintegrated as our bodies presented new identities. End quote. So I've attended several of the online worship services of Community of Hope Mennonite Church in Bellingham. That's our newest PNMC church plant. Their weekly worship is online on a Monday night. So I encourage anybody to attend those if you're interested. You might remember Rachel Weasley, guitar player, pastor. She's the founder and head pastor there. They intentionally gather to do church in a queer way. They also have a quarterly Sunday school, and those are most interesting. She brings in speakers from all over the continent to share about new learnings about scripture and learning about church in a queer setting. So here's another quote from Kim Kort again. A queer spirituality breaks through borders, through boundaries that mark out what's safe or what's real, that cut people off, that prevent people from connecting to something deeper. I think about how much Jesus crossed over into what is prohibited and forbidden in his ministry. In all his dining, traveling, consorting, working, living, and partying with those who would fit that category of band. And every time he crossed over, he created community by making space for everyone. Understanding what it means to be queer also means taking on some dark things, such as the violence against queer people. The sheer hypocrisy behind the bathroom debate is very upsetting to me as a mother. Not only is there zero evidence that trans people are more likely to be sexual predators than others, my Claire is twice as likely to experience sexual violence herself just by being a trans woman. And I did say take on just now as a word to try to mean something deeper than just understand. Because being open and affirming means standing alongside, being an ally, advocating for, and taking on as many of the struggles as we can help with. 4 years ago, Claire went to the DMV to change her ID, and I helped her, provided a ride. The guy at the DMV kept calling Claire son. I didn't have any words at that time. I didn't know what to do. I failed her at that time, and I'm still paying a little bit for that. Remember when we learned last year in God and the Gay Christian that homophobia is actually about defending patriarchy? Well, this is a continuation of that. Transphobia is rooted in toxic masculinity, something that affects all of us. Some of the best insights I've heard and read on toxic masculinity is from a trans man, perhaps because he has the unique perspective of experiencing manhood after being raised first as a young woman. Schuler Bylar, not sure I'm pronouncing his name right, but has written the book He, She, Them: How We Talk About Gender and Why It Matters. He says toxic masculinity grows from the very human yearning to be included and valued. But then society instead doles out shame and isolation to our boys. From his book, Man Up, Grow a Pair, Boys Don't Cry. These are the seeds for violence and destruction, beginning with young boys and infecting everyone else. Demanding accountability from men is not awful or destructive. It is absolutely necessary. But the problem is not cis men, it's patriarchy and transphobia. The problem is not straight men, it's homophobia. The problem is not white men, it's white supremacy. Understanding these distinctions is crucial to dismantling the systems. End quote. And as always, it's the personal change of heart that is most important. We all know people who are part of the LGBTQIA plus community. Knowing them is not enough. We are to be present and show up for them. And if you want to join me in learning about activism, I can recommend the books by trans woman biologist activist Julia Serrano. She has been brilliantly critical of everything from the misdiagnosis of gender dysphoria as a mental illness to the lopsided way traditional trans care has been more about protecting the sensitivities of a broader hetero society than about actual trans health. And I am doing a lot of quoting from books because this is what I'm learning, and I feel like their words say it best. So, Ms. Serrano says, I have been fortunate enough to have had the rather rare experience of being perceived by others as both a man and a woman, as homosexual and heterosexual, as feminine, masculine, and gender ambiguous at different points in my life. People treated me in vastly different ways in each case, and the assumptions they made about my gender and sexuality often had little to do with my own identity and its and life history. As a gender activist, I believe that it's crucial for us to finally recognize this massive difference that exists between perception and personal experience. While I do not believe that there is an impenetrable wall that separates women from men or queers from straights, I do believe one exists between our own experiential gender, which we live, feel, and experience firsthand, and the genders of others, which we merely perceive or make presumptions about, but can never truly know in a tangible way. We must stop projecting what we wish were true about gender and sexuality onto other people, and instead learn to yield to their unique individual identities, experiences, and perspectives. Moving away from the binary opposites we were brought up on. I mean, I think of one just offhand. My mother is short, my father-in-law was tall. But there's a lot of things in between. And so to always have these opposing forces has not been helpful to us, especially in this discussion. So, moving away from binary opposites, being accepting of and hands off what we don't understand about the sexuality of others, embracing all the children of God, that feels like how Jesus might celebrate pride. I conclude with a reminder of the statement our committee compiled and we've put on our website to best describe what we're trying to be. But again, this is aspirational, something to work on, something that we're learning about day by day. Evergreen Mennonite Church welcomes and affirms the belonging of LGBTQIA+ folk in the life and work of our congregation, believing that everyone is the beloved child of God and that we are called by Jesus to be a community that embodies this divine love and embraces all of God's children.